Good morning. Today's daf in Kedushin Ayin Dal Ron Ayin Gimel Mud Beis. Here in all of the sugyas of Yichus. So we are just going to be, for the first part of today's daf, going over sugyas of Ne'emanus, a sugya that has come up already a number of times. Why are we talking about Ne'emanus? Because we're talking about the Asufi, right? Of the 10 classes of Jews where we're discussing who can marry whom. So of those classes, so we have the Shtuki, we have the Asufi. The Shtuki, so knows full well who his mother is, but cannot identify his father. The Asufi, so Rechmanus is an abandoned child. An abandoned child where there's a real concern that the child may be a mamzer. And so Mala also be Yuchsin, and you cannot marry the Asufi. So so we got on to quickly a discussion of whether or not there can be an identification of an abandoned child by the parents. So we got on to the topic of Ne'emanus. So we are going to be starting this morning with more on Ne'emanus. Amar Rav Chista. So we are in Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, and it's about halfway down on the Amud. So Amar Rav Chista Shosha Ne'emanim La'alter. So Ve'ilahein Asufi Chaya Poteres Chaversa. So three people immediately, given credibility immediately. So, but when I say immediately, only when they declare it immediately. So we're going to go over each one of them. Asufi Hadamarn. So as far as the Asufi is concerned, go back to yesterday's daf. Right at the end of yesterday's daf, we said that a child was abandoned, and then parents immediately turn around and want to identify their child so they can do so, and they'll have ne'emanus, but only la'alter. So the midwife who just delivered the twin babies. So the midwife delivering the twin babies. So I've experienced with this meaning that was I in the room at the time? Yeah, I think I don't know. Anyway, but certainly what's it called? I didn't see anything, but the doctor, the modern day midwife, the doctor saw everything. So in other words, identification: who came out first? Who came out second? Obviously, with practical ramifications regarding Bechor, and so now they're twins; they look the same. So now who's going to be able to be extended the credibility to say this one came out first, this one came second? So the midwife. Now, according to the Tanakhama, la'alter, meaning that as long as the midwife was there in the birthing room at the time, so now that midwife has extended the credibility all the while that she's in the room. Now, the second position in the Braisa, which I read quickly, is the position of Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, Huchsaka al omda. So only for that period of time she's believed. Effectively, the two of them are saying, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer, that the Chaya is extended this credibility of identification of which of the two came out first, but only for La'alter. But there obviously has to be some sort of subtle difference between the two, because the way the Bryce is presented, there's some argument existing between the two. My Beinayu, that's the Gemara's question. So what is the difference between the two? Ika Beinayu Da Da Pa. The difference is going to be whether or not she's in the room, but she turned her back on the kids. According to the Tanakhama, even though she turned her back on the kids, but she's still in the room. So as long as she's still in the room, that's fine. As long as she didn't leave the room. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, he takes a more machmir position. Where, in other words, she had to have been facing the children all the while since birth, and she had to have been in the room. The moment she turns her back on the kids, that's it. She loses her credibility.
Who would be in the room to say whether she turned her face or not?
Okay, fine. Right. Okay, fair question. I don't know. Poteres chavers deham. Mahi. Okay, so now, we're talking about ne'emanus la'alter. Credibility is extended, but only for just the immediate moments thereafter. So where does this apply? So we're collecting together three different areas of halacha. The asufi, which we just covered. The identification of which of the twins came out first, which we just covered. And now poteres chavers deham. So what exactly is that case? So Mahi did not. So this is a Mishnah Nida. So the Mishnah Nida describes three women sleeping in one bed. Blood now is found on the bed. The blood came from one of those three women. We don't know which one. So kul and tamei. So they're all going to be tamei. In other words, they all have to be concerned with the fact that they're the ones who discharged that blood. A discharge of blood renders one of them a nida. We don't know which one, but in other words, so it's a suffix. It's a suffix on a tumma d'araisa. So each one of them now is going to have to at least suspect that they are the ones who discharge. Fine. Now, if after the women get off the bed and see the blood and then do an examination, if any one of those women actually show through the examination that they were the one that discharged, so now we can positively identify. So the one who tested positive is the one who discharged on the bed, and the other two are fine. The other two are not nidos. So Amar Rav Chista bat gatzma kishir vest, and here's the punchline, and that is that this examination that's done to prove that she is in fact the one who discharges only when the examination was done immediately upon discovery. If there's any period of time that lapses between the discovery and the testing, so now the testing's not going to prove anything. Meaning it'll certainly prove that she is currently discharging, but that doesn't mean that she was historically discharging. And so therefore, we don't know definitively at the time of the discharge on the bed who's responsible for that discharge. So here's a third example, where the Ne'emana's credibility is only for La'alter. It's only for immediate. Tana Rabbanan. Ne'emana's Chaya Lomar Zeh Kohen V'Zeh Levi V'Zeh Nesim V'Zeh Mamzer. Okay, so as far as the Chaya and her credibility, look, she's the one who is delivering the child. She is the one identifying the child. We just covered that. And what about labeling the child? So she's also given credibility for that as well. So Bamedvar Mamorim Shalom Karala Shem Arer Aval Karala Arer Eino Ne'emanes. But the Gemara points out that's only if she's going unchallenged. So unchallenged, she has credibility. Once there is a formal challenge, and everything here in the Gemara is of course legal. So once there's a legal challenge against her, so now she loses that credibility of labeling whether the child is a Kohen or a Levi or et cetera, et cetera. So Ira Damai. So the Gemara says, okay, what qualifies as a legal challenge? So the Gemara says, Elabi Ira Trey. So based on Rav Yochanan says that the only time that we are legally challenging something is where two people are contesting what she's saying. She says that the child is a mamzer, and now two people say, nope, well, right, a formal challenge by two. Rav Yochanan says that's a formal challenge, which means that if one person is opposing what she's saying, she is going to have more credibility than the one challenger. Ibai, same of the Gemara, says, maybe you could suggest the following. Maybe the challenger is one challenger, which normally in halacha does not have validity. However, you need two challenging when there's a cheskas kashrus. In other words, when I'm starting with a chazaka, which is a presumption, which is a halachic, not just reality, but creates a halachic reality. So now to go opposing a chazaka, so there I need two. However, if there's no chazaka and we really don't know what we're looking at, in other words, here's a baby that was just born, right? I don't know the parents. Where are they right now? I'm unsure. Obviously, the parents themselves can provide full credibility of the status of that kid. But regardless, in other words, we know that the Chaya also now has extended credibility. However, over here, the Chaya just is presenting a baby. And what is the nature of that baby? So the Chaya is saying. But the Chaya is saying, however, there's no chazaka. In other words, the parents apparently are not around. For whatever reason, the parents are not around. So we're starting with no presumption. So when we start with no presumption, under those circumstances, even one would serve as a fair challenge. When does Rav Yochanan demand and require two to serve as a fair challenge? That's when they're opposing a chazaka.
How does a midwife know that
it's a Kohen, a lady, a man? In other words, she was working with the parents. She knew who the parents were. Okay, right. Correct. There are certain assumptions you have to make as well. Correct. Okay, and more Ne'emanus issues. Okay, a seller can identify who the buyer is, right? Multiple buyers now are claiming that they're the ones who bought an item, and so the seller, even though the seller is one person, but the seller can now be given the credibility to identify who the buyer is, who the rightful buyer is. And over here, I mean, we could have asked this question previously as well, like how is this Ne'emanus working? Normally, when giving aid, so what do you need? You need two kosher aidim. Over here, one person is given sufficient credibility. So, my best guess, but I'm saying this on my own, and so you don't have to. You're right. You have my blessed permission to disregard what I'm saying. But in other words, there has to be a certain functionality, right? In other words, we need to function as a society. Certain things just need to be allowed in order to function. So over here, when we're talking about buying and selling in commerce, and now somebody can come along and say, hey, I'm the one who purchased it. So in order for business to function, in order for people to function, so therefore we're just going to say to the seller, you know what? We're going to give you full credibility. That could be part of it. And there could be, I mean, in other words, there could be also other factors that play a role. But I'm just right now just thinking out loud in terms of how are we extending credibility to one person? So now, as long as he still has the item that he is selling in his hand, so he's given that credibility. Otherwise, he has not extended that credibility. In other words, the idea of biyado that we keep going over again and again. When something's in your control, you have credibility. The relationship between biyado and nemanus is a firmly established relationship that we have spoken about time and again throughout the Gemara. So over here, you're selling an item. You have two people claiming they purchased the item. So and you still have the item of sale in your hand. The seller still has it in his hand. So he's extended full credibility.
Who has it? One of them, or two of them?
Right now, currently, neither of them have it.
The seller has it.
The seller has it.
I understand, but the seller doesn't have it.
Just one second. Let's just do a little bit more. Venechse zuzim imanaka were $9 medal for the very top of the amud. So the Gemara says, now, follow the money. Okay. I find myself saying this a number of times throughout the Gemara. Okay. It's obviously it's a simple rule in the Gemara. Follow the money. In other words, right? Two people claim they purchased it. He's holding whose money right now? Meaning a claim of purchase is not just simply, hey, I bought it. A claim of purchase is, I bought it. I paid for it already. So why don't we just simply follow the money and see, trace the money and see whose money is actually holding. So the Gemara says, Lo tzricha danaka mitarvayum. So the Gemara says, you know whose money he's holding? He's holding both of their monies. Now, that's weird. So in other words, so I have a seller who's still holding the sale item in his hand, two people claiming they purchased it, and as far as the money's concerned, they both paid for it. That's weird. And before I get to the punchline, so and you have to just wonder at this point in time in the Gemara, meaning if he's accepting money from both of them for the sale, like how much credibility can we actually really extend him? But let's get to the punchline. V'amar chad mi da'atai v'chad ba'karchai v'lo yadia ha'i midaita v'ahila midaito. And what happens the following? So you had two potential buyers, and one of them, he agreed to sell it to him, and the other one, he did not agree. But the one who was being, the one he did not agree to was being a little bit pushy, being a little bit aggressive. I'm going to buy it from you. You're going to take my money. Here's my money. And he shoves the money in the guy's hand. So now we're at the point where, as far as the money's concerned, he's holding money from the two of them. One, he accepted the money in agreement. The second, he only accepted the money forcefully. Then on top of that, right now, we don't know, meaning the observers don't know which one purchased it with agreement, which one did not. So under those circumstances, as long as the seller still has the item in his hand, the item of sale in his hand, so we're going to extend him the credibility in terms of identifying which one he sold with the agreement. Well, let's do one more of these. Nem andai lamar zechis v'lazech hayavti. So as far as the dayan is concerned, so the case came in front of a court. It was a civil case, right? Normally you have three judges, right? You could do it in front of one under certain circumstances, but anyway. And now I have one of the judges who basically said, here's what happened. And who else is now here to tell me what happened? No one else is here. Everyone else went away. Okay. They decided case is done. I'm going home. So now with one judge left reporting what happened, so we're going to give that judge the credibility of saying what exactly happened. But that's only when the Bali Dinim are still there. But if the Bali Dinim are no longer there, so then one judge is no longer extended that credibility. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. When there is a basin and when there's a judgment, you know what happens? So it gets written up. In other words, you have the stenographer, right? Back in the day, you had a stenographer. And so when you walked out of the court, and you were victorious in a civil case, so you were given you were given your paperwork. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. What are we doing over here relying on a judge's credibility to tell us what happened? What about the paperwork? So the next is Zuchus, Imanaka. So Lo Tzricha, Dekriya Zuchusayu. So the Gemara says, you know, right, it happens all the time. Where's the paperwork? Lost it. What's it called? I tore it up. It was torn. Whatever. No paperwork is no longer there. Very good. V'nedar v'nedaynenu. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what happened. There was a civil case. There were judges there. The judges came to a ruling. Okay, so now everyone left and the paperwork is gone. So now what are we saying? We'll allow the judges, we'll allow one judge to testify in terms of who was awarded the money and who has lost the money. Oh. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why don't we just retry the case? In other words, we're going to assume that if we retry the case, we're going to arrive at the same conclusion. Now, that's a funny assumption. Immediately, the Gemara pushes back on that. V'neda v'nedayninu v'shuda d'dayne. So the Gemara says, we're talking about where the case was a toss-up. Okay, now, shuda d'dayne comes up a number of times throughout the Gemara. Rashi and Tosfos classically debate exactly what does that mean? It was a toss-up. So over here, Rashi. So I'll do Rashi today. Okay, for more on this, see Tosfos over here. That's the first Tosfos on Amud, but I'll show you the Rashi inside. Shuda d'dayne b'din she'en atale b'tam ela hakol b'fiv shel dayan. So over here, there are no legal arguments to be made. It's just a question of a feeling that the judge has. Rashi explains. Rashi explains. What would be the circumstance where it's not a legal argument, but a judge's discretion? Why would that be? Rashi goes on to present. So over here, so we know that there was a loan taken out. We know that the creditor's name is Tovia. Two creditors walk into the court, and they both identify themselves as Tovia. They show the paperwork. They show the driver's license. I know that's anachronistic. I know. They show the driver's license, and lo and behold, both of their names are Tovia. Now, which one would have lent him the money? Everything right now seems to be equal, right? They are both living in proximity to the borrower. In other words, both of them right now are making basically an equivalent case that they are, in fact, the lender. So and now everything being equal, there is no longer any legal weight to one over the other. Now what we'll allow the judge to do is, you know what, judge, you right, go with your gut. In other words, you know them, you know the players, you know the participants in this case, and you probably have a feeling as to which one is actually owed the money. Based on your discretion and on your gut, so you go ahead and you make the decision. And as Rashi points out over there, the Kevish Apostle Cain and Balachzor Ainu Choser. Lefichach Ain Rotzin Lachzor Midin Shema Yitnu Libo Letzarashani. Now, if we were to do this again, said Rashi, what may end up happening? The judge's gut may tell him differently. So in other words, if it's something that's based on legal arguments, so legal arguments are, hopefully, facts, and you could replicate it. And if I were to replicate it, we would come out to the same conclusion. But if it's not a legal argument, like Shuda D'dayne, as Rashi just explained, so who knows? Who knows how the case may come out? Fascinating Gemara. And we just did is scratch the surface. If you look at Tosos over here, Tosos quotes Rashi, argues with Rashi, gives a different interpretation of Shuda D'dayne. We're going to go on in the Gemara. Amar of Nachman Shosha Ne'emanem Ala Bechor. Okay, so before we get to the next Mishnah, so we have a little bit more to go regarding Ne'emanus. So Rav Nachman tells us that three people are going to be believed regarding the Bechor Ve'elon Chaya Ve'imo, and that's going to be the midwife, the father, and the mother, Chay La'alter. Now, as we already just got done saying, as far as the Chay is concerned, her credibility is good, but only upon birth. Upon birth of the baby, So now the chai is going to go ahead and properly identify who that baby is. Ima koshiva ve'aviv la'olam. Now, mom can identify the baby for the first 7 days, mother to the exclusion of father, for reasons which I'm about to present. And as far as dad's concerned, from the bris going onward, so the father can go ahead and identify the baby. As far as the mother's concerned and the mother's ability to identify for those first 7 days and not dad, look at Rashi. Fascinating Rashi over here. Rashi writes, Kol Shiva. Shadain en aviv makirbo. You know, dad's not going to recognize the baby for those first 7 days. Why not? Rashi writes, because for those first 7 days, so mom's going to mom. And she's going to basically be holding on to that baby. And, you know, and right, we're going back to like a more traditional time. Right, where's dad right now? In other words, okay, he went to work. Okay, and so when does he first see the baby? At the bris. Rashi writes this. So, omikan ve'elech mutal aviv la'akiru k'dechziv yakir. Now, from the bris and onward, so now he's seeing his son effectively for the first time at the bris. And it's at that point in time now, so dad's got to study what the kid looks like. He's got to positively identify the kid, but that's only from the bris going onward. Okay. Fantastic Rashi. Anyway.
I would say just the opposite. Mother always knows.
Huh? Oh, in other words, meaning after the bris, is it the father to the exclusion of the mother? Right? Probably not. Meaning, probably after the bris, it's the mother and the father. Yeah. In other words, I think the Gemara's point, Rav Nachman's point, is just that for the first 7 days, it's only the mother, not the father. That's what I think. I think that's the pshat in the Gemara. Kid detanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa, yakir en la'acherim. Meaning, in the beginning of Parshas Kisei, we've been quoting a lot of from this Parsha recently. So over there, the Torah says, what does the Torah say? So the father has to recognize his son. That's a simple pshat in the pasuk. The Gemara in the Braisa says Yakir also means Yakiren la'acherim. Not only does he have to recognize the son, but he also has the ability to identify the son. Recognition means not just personal recognition, but the ability to help other people recognize the son, otherwise known as identification. Mikan Amar Rav Yehuda, Neman Adam Lamar Zeben Nibachor. Ukeshem Shenamar Lamar Zeben Nibachor, Kach Neamar Lamar Zeben Grusha, Vezeben Chalutza, Vechachamim Omrim Eino Neman. So now, as far as identifying your son to be the Bechor, so that's firmly established. Where we go from there is subject to a debate. According to Rabbi Yehuda, so not only can the father positively identify his son, he can also negatively identify his son. Meaning to apostle his son and say that his son's a Ben Grusha, father can do that. So in other words, later in his life, the Kohen who fathered a child said, you know, okay, let's be honest, okay, in other words, you didn't know this, the declaration done by the father. He's got no witnesses. It's just him talking right now. Your mother was a divorcee, right? Mother's no longer in the picture. Your mother was a divorcee. You're my son, but you're a halal. So according to Rav Yehuda, father could do that. Okay. In other words, then.
But we only believe him on the positive side. We don't believe him on the negative.
So you're saying the Chachamim. I'm right now explaining Rav Yehuda. So according to Rav Yehuda, it works in both directions. It works both for positive and for negative. So that's the Shita Rav Yehuda, and the Chachamim disagree. And the Chachamim say no. In other words, the Chachamim say that the father's only extended credibility only to help, not to hurt. Okay. So it's my machlokas between the Tanai. Abishal Hayukari Lishizuki Baduki. Now, we're finally at the end of the Mishnah. Okay, the Mishnah takes us all the way back to Samech Tes. We're already on Ayin Dalet. So we've been sitting on this Mishnah for a while. So here, what did the Mishnah do? The Mishnah spanned the 10 different classes of Jewish people. The Mishnah identified who can marry whom. And then at the end of the Mishnah brought in the opinion of Abishal. And Abishal says, you know, as far as the Shisuki is concerned, so the Shisuki cannot identify who his father is. So we call him a Baduki. Oh, okay, that's great. And what does that mean? Meaning, obviously, he's making a halachic point. What is he trying to say? So the Gemara says, my Baduki. The Gemara questioned exactly that. What does he mean by that? So So the Gemara says, well, maybe what Abishal means is the following. He doesn't know who his father is. I got a great idea. Why don't we ask mom? Abishal says that's exactly what we're going to do. According to Abishal, when a man cannot identify his father, so according to Abishal, what he's now allowed to do is ask his mom. Mom, who's dad? And according to Abishal, what can mom do? Mom can identify who dad is. And give him the yichus that that he would love. So, keman. So, Rabbi Gamliel, Tanina Chadazimna. So the Gemara says, well, you know who that's going like? That's going like Rabbi Gamliel. And you want to talk about a callback. We're right now approaching the end of Masechta Kedushin. We're approaching the end of Seder Nashim. We are going all the way back. Now, the first Masechta is Yevamos, but then after Yevamos, what do? We did Ksuvos. So this is taking us back in terms of Daf Yomi, more than a year ago. Okay, I didn't check the calendar. But in other words, this is all the way at the beginning of Ksuvos, if you remember. If you remember, we had a debate in terms of the credibility of women, in terms of who was the man that they were with. So, Tanina Chadazam Izimna did nan. Haisam Uber Zamrla Matibashal Uber Zeh, woman's pregnant, and Rachmanis, a woman's not married, and we're asking her, who's dad? So, Amrla Mishponi Vikoin who? Ram Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar, Omrim Nem. And it's Rabbi Shua, Omer Lomi Pia Anuchayan. Amr Rabbi Yehuda Mashmo, Lachika Rabbi Gamliel. So she identifies dad as being a Kohen. Okay? And so now is she going to be believed? Machlokis, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yoshua. And oh, by the way, if you remember the beginning of Ksuvos, there are multiple Mishnayos that present this threaded machlokus of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. And who does Halacha follow like? The Halacha follows like Rabbi Gamliel, which is she is Ne'emena. She's believed. So, if that's true, what's the Gemara bothered by? The Gemara is bothered by a rerun. Meaning, if we already know the Gemara and Ksuvos, which we do, and if we already know the machlokus Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Gamliel, and if we already know that the halacha falls like Rabbi Gamliel, what have we just learned now? Nothing new. Okay. Granted, by the way, every now and then I'd love Chazara, and we'd love to review this information. But the Gemara says, yeah, but there's nothing new over here. So chad alahachshir b'avachad alahachshir bevita. The Gemara says, yeah, there is news over here because the Gemara in Ksuvos, the Mishnayos in Ksuvos, was talking about her in terms of her credibility vis-a-vis her. Maybe over here in the end of Kedushin, we're talking about credibility vis-a-vis her child. So the Gemara says, "Hani chalaman damer ledivrei amachshir ba posel bebita laman damer ledivrei amachshir ba machshir bebita." So Abba Shalom may asalash meinan. So the Gemara says, "Okay, but again, let's go all the way back to Ksuvos. She, according to Rabbi Gamliel, she has credibility. Did Rabbi Gamliel mean there are two ways to understand Rabbi Gamliel?" Did Rabbi Gamliel mean she only has credibility vis-a-vis herself, but not her child? She can only testify about herself, not about her child? Or did Rabbi Gamliel mean that she has credibility across the board, both legabe herself and legabe her child? Now, if I went with the former pshat, so now I understand Abba Shaul is introducing a new idea. But if I went with the latter pshat, so then all Abba Shaul is doing is reiterating what we already learned back in Ksuvos. So the Gemara says, "Abba Shaul Adifa Midrami Gamliel." Dima Hasam Hava Amina Hasam Rov Kshir Metzlava Hechad Rov Psula Metzlava Imalot Tzricha. So the Gemara says, "Abba Shaul, even if I'm going to go with the latter pshat, Abba Shaul exceeds Rami Gamliel. Abba Shaul has even extended her more credibility than Rami Gamliel did. As far as Rami Gamliel is concerned, she's pregnant. Who's dad? We ask her. According to Rami Gamliel, we believe her." And let's even say that we're going to believe her not only vis-a-vis herself, but vis-a-vis the child. Okay, let's say all that. Abba Shaul goes even further. Because Abba Shaul will tell you that Rabbi Gamliel only made his case and only said his pshat when the majority of men in the community that she's living in are kosher men. So not only is she testifying, but contextually, chances are the man who impregnated her was a kosher. The counter-argument, by the way, I'm just going to say under my breath, parenthetically, the counter-argument is that also the man who impregnated her had relations prematurely before they got married. So it does challenge, it calls into question, you know, it must have been a kosher man because the majority of men are kosher. Yeah, but at the same time, however, okay, anyway, and close parentheses, I'm going to go back to my regular volume. So, okay, we're right now, just we're focusing on the woman. Of course, the man is believed. We just went over that earlier this morning. But over here, we're just focusing on the woman and her credibility. What Abba Shaul is saying is that I'm going to go even further. I'm going to say that not only is she credible, but even in a context where the pool of eligible men in the community are not the majority. They're the minority. I don't care. Abba Shaul says is that she, if she was impregnated, and now in terms of identifying who the man was, and we don't know who the man was, and all we have is her word to go on, Abba Shaul says, I'm going to believe her, even if the eligible men, The men who are kosher in the community do not represent the majority. They're only the minority. I'm still going to believe her. And then the Gemara is an end note to that says, I'm a Rav Halacha Gabashol. And Rav says that's in fact the Halacha. The Halacha falls like Gabashol. Okay, good. Adkan. So the end of the first half of today's daf really ended on a note of various issues of credibility. We talked about credibility of the midwife, credibility of the mother, credibility of the father, credibility of a woman in general identifying who impregnated her. So all different types of credibility, credibility where it's only extended for the immediate future, credibility where it's extended for a week, credibility that's extended in perpetuity. Okay, so a lot of Ne'emana sugyos over here that finished off yesterday's daf and went through the first half of today's daf. Okay. If I had any coffee left, I'd take a sip right now. That would be my move. I have no more coffee, but okay. But now I'm just I'm creating room. I'm creating space as we're about to start the next sugya and the next mishnah. Okay, we're going to go now back to Yichus. Okay, again, a basic question over here in the fourth parak of Kedushin, and that is that you have various categories and classes amongst the Jewish people. You have Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, but that's only three out of ten. There are seven other categories of Jewish people. And who can marry whom? So that is what we are discussing here in the fourth parak of Kedushin. The Mishnah tells us, Kol ha'asurim lavo b'kal mutarim lavo zeh b'zeh. Rabbi Yehuda oser. Rabbi Eliezer omer vadan v'vadan mutar. Vadan b'sfeikan. U'sfeikan b'vadan. U'sfeikan b'sfeikan. Oser. So three opinions over here in the Mishnah in terms of who can marry whom. Let's start off with the Tana Kama. So Tana Kama says, Kol ha'asurim lavo b'kal. So who cannot marry within Kal? So we already know. So that would be Mamzer. That would be Shtuki. That would be a Sufi. So what they can do is they can marry within one another. So in other words, so it's just another way of organizing information that we saw earlier. In a moment, the Gemara is going to ask a simple question, which is, I'm happy we organized the information, but if we already know this information, so what's news over here? Hold that thought. That's going to be a big part of today's daf. So, that is the opinion of the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda simply utters one word, Aser. Okay, what's Aser according to Rav Yehuda? Who can't marry whom according to Rav Yehuda? Okay, that needs to be explained. That's also a big part of the remainder of today's daf. And Rav Elazar Omer, and then the third opinion in the Mishnah, is Rav Elazar. The Vada can marry a Vadai. Mamzer can marry a Mamzeris. A Mamzer can marry an Asin. Anyone who are Psule Kahal can marry amongst one another, but only when they're definitively psule kal. However, vadan b'sfeikan, sfeikan b'vadan, sfeikan b'sfeikan aser. But you can't have a vad and a safek marrying one another. For example, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if let's say I have a mamzer and I have a sufi, an abandoned child, is the abandoned child a mamzer?
No.
We don't, safek. We don't know. Safek. So now, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the mamzer can't marry the asufi because that's a vade and a suffik, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, does can't go together. Okay, so ve'elo hina sfeiko shtuki asufi kusi. Now, who's the suffik? A suffik would be the shtuki. That's the person who can't identify his father. The asufi, the abandoned child, can't identify neither mother or father, and the kusi is also a suffik as well. Hold on, later, not today, but later. We'll talk about why the kusi is put under the category of suffix. Okay, so all we need to do right now is explain the Mishnah. Now, I already explained the Mishnah, but the Gemara is going to be bothered by simple questions. Michael asrim lava bekali lema mamzer nesine and shtuki v'asufi atanele bereisha mamzer nesine shtuki v'asufi mutarm lavo zebezeh. So the Gemara's question is really simple. The Tanakam of our Mishnah, right? Kol asrim lava bekal, all the psule kahal, people who can't marry kahal, you know, mamzerim, nesinim, asufim, shtetuki. So what can they do? They can marry amongst one another. Okay, great. In other words, we learned that in the first Mishnah of this parak. So it's true, the Tanakhama over here is just presenting the same information, but it's the same information. We knew that already. So Visu and the Gemara says, and further, meaning that's already one question which demands an answer. But even before we get to the answer, a second question. Rabbi Yehuda is there. And then the second opinion of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. What does he say? Rabbi Yehuda says, Aser. What's Aser? So ahaya, ilem avadam besfekan. Hamidiktani sefer Rabbi Lazar amr avadam avadam motar avadam besfekan 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 aser. So mechlad Rabbi Yehuda lo shirle. So is Rabbi Yehuda telling me that I can't marry a vade to a safek? Well, that's the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, which is the third opinion in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yehuda is not just reiterating what Rabbi Eliezer says. If that were in fact the case, the Mishnah would have just simply said, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eliezer say, meaning Rabbi Yehuda is something else. Well, what is that something else? V'chitim Rabbi Yehuda oster agar by mamzeres. And maybe what Rabbi Yehuda is telling me is that, you know what can't happen? A ger can't marry a mamzeres. Now, this issue has been litigated yesterday's daf, the day prior. Ger and mamzeres, that's a big topic. But we already know about this machlokis, and that's not what our Mishnah is talking about. Midi ger by mamzeres ketani kol asrim lava bekal ketani. And meanwhile, our Mishnah is not talking about a ger. Read the words of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, kol ha'asurim lavo bekal. That's not a ger. So the Gemara says, really what we're doing right now, it's a struggle. We don't know what our Mishnah is talking about. And if all you're doing is reading the Mishnah kepshuto, that's just a restatement of what we learned in the first Mishnah. So I can't, that's number one. What's the Tanakh teaching me? Nothing new. Everything he said is what already was in the first Mishnah. And then on top of that, Rabbi Yehuda says, Aser, what's Rabbi Yehuda even responding to? What is Aser according to Rabbi Yehuda? So there are two really basic questions. And for the remainder of today's daf, all we're going to try to do is wrap our head around what's happening in our Mishnah. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda, obviously Rabbi Yehuda over here being the Amora, is now going to offer what is the first attempt of explaining our Mishnah. And yes, if you're listening carefully to me, you heard me say the word attempt, and you know what that means. It means that it's an attempt. It's not going to be successful. The Gemara is going to take four tries before it finally is satisfied with an explanation of our Mishnah. So over here in the Gemara, like we do every day, and that is that the Gemara is a laboratory. In other words, we're testing hypotheses, and sometimes they get rejected. But in the course, in other words, so why don't we just cut to the end? Because obviously the Tanaim, the Amoraim, all felt that. In other words, in the trial and error, so there's a lot to be learned. So over here, we go through trial and error. So v'hachi kamer kol asrim lavo bekal kahuna. So let's suggest the following: that in our Mishnah, when it says that kol asrim lavo bekal, we meant kal kahuna. You know, the people who can't marry kohanim. My ninu giors pchus mi ba'al shalosh shanim v'yom echad udeloker Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So mutarim lavo zeh bezeh. So those people can't marry a kohen, and you know who that is. That is a ger, or in this case, a gioris. A gioris cannot marry a kohen. And we're talking about a gioris, even though she converted under 3 years of age. Under 3 years of age, unlike the opinion of the Rashbi. The Rashbi's position, we haven't seen this yet in the Gemara. It's coming up in a couple days from now. The Rashbi's position is that if you have a girl converting under 3 years of age, she's allowed to marry a kohen. We are not holding like the Rashbi over here in our interpretation of our Mishnah. Which means that if I have a convert, even though she converted under 3 years of age, so now this convert, this Giyaris, is allowed to marry a Mamzer. That's how you interpret our Mishnah. Which, by the way, was not discussed in the first Mishnah. So now we're breaking new ground. So, V'nukma b'vashal shanim v'yam echad v'afilu Rav Shimon bar Yochai. So the Gemara says, well, I don't understand. Why don't I simply say that's talking about a girl converted above the age of three and include the Rashbi's position? In came Mitzidat Tabra. So the Gemara says, well, if that were true, so then the Mishnah would then only confuse us. Because Elatayim Debashal Shanim V'yam Echad. Because then if I would incorporate the Rashbi's position in our Mishnah, I would say, only when above three. Ha'pchuz Mibashal Shanim V'yam Echad Mutelsav Abikal Kahuna. And then I would erroneously conclude that above three conversion can marry a mamzer. A below three conversion can't marry a mamzer. That's how I would have read it had we tried to incorporate the Rashbi's position. So and we arrive at that incorrect conclusion. So just to make it as smooth as possible, we are just going to simply say that our Mishnah is talking about where she converted below three, unlike the position of the Rashbi. Okay, anyway, I know that part was complicated. But right now, in our first attempt to explain the Mishnah says, who's our Mishnah talking about? A Giyaris. And what's the Mishnah's point? A Giyaris can marry a Ger. Oh, okay. And uchlalahu, the Gemara says, now wait one second. Even if that's the correct interpretation of our Mishnah, it doesn't work as a rule. Why not? The kol asurim lavo bekalkuna, matarim lavo zebezeva, ari amana, gusha, chalala, zona, asurim, lavo bekalkuna, asurim lavo zebezeva. The Gemara says there are plenty of women who can't marry a kohen who are not allowed to marry a mamzer. Right? We could just rattle off the list. Amana, grusha, chalala, zona. All of them are disqualified from marrying a kohen, but they can't marry a mamzer. So in other words, you're putting this as a rule, but it's not true. Visu hamutar aser, and then what does the rule also instruct me? That if you are allowed to marry a kohen, you can't marry a mamzer. But that's also not true. Vare ger shemutar bekohenes mutar bemamzeres. Remember the ger? Ger can marry a kohenes, and a ger can also marry a mamzeres. Now this was a point of controversy, but this was the conclusion that we arrived at just a couple of days ago. This is the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. So in other words, as rules go, it doesn't work. Meaning, if all the Mishnah is telling me is that a ger is allowed to marry a mamzeres, fine. But that's not what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah is encapsulating it as a rule, and it's not true. The rule is simply not true.
Mar seems to equate marrying a kohenes with entering college.
Right.
Which is not exactly correct.
Well, but the wording of the Mishnah would indicate that if you can go into the Kohen family on either side. Okay, you're right. But it seems to be focusing more on the male than on the female. But okay. Ella Amar of Nasan Baroshi Achi Kamar. So here we go now, round two. Again, the goal right now is just simply, what is the Mishnah talking about? When the Mishnah, the Tanakhama says that if you are a Surim Lava Bakal Mutarm Zebezeh, what does that mean? So, round number two. Hachi Kamar Kosha Kohen Aser Lisa's Bito. So, if a Kohen can't marry this person's daughter, okay? Umay Nihu Gershon Aser Gioris. Uchi Rebbe Lazar Ben Yaakov. So, Mutarm Lava Zebezeh. So, if the Kohen cannot marry the daughter. Now, whose daughter can a Kohen not marry? So, let's say I have converts getting married. He converted, she converted, they got married. They have children. So, their children are now Jews by birth, right? According to the Shita of Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, yes, but a Kohen cannot marry their daughter. Okay. Again, this is something we're going to be discussing in more detail coming up. Ein Zayin, today's Ein Dalet. So just 3 days from now, we're going to be doing this sugya of can a Kohen marry the daughter of a Gioris? Okay, good. So anyway, so according to Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, a Kohen cannot. So effectively, what are we saying? We're really saying the same thing we said moments earlier, but in presenting the Mishnah this way, we really are just talking about Gerim. If the Kohen can't marry the daughter, i.e. the children of Gerim, so then said people, i.e. the Gerim, are allowed to marry a Mamzer. Okay. So the Gemara says, Uchlalahu. The Gemara says again, you're right. But as a rule, does this work? It doesn't work as a rule. Kol shekohen aser lisa bito mutarm lavo zebezeh v'arei chalal. Shenase bais yisrael de kohen aser lisa bito v'aser namo lavo zebezeh. So the Gemara says, what happens when a chalal marries a bais yisrael? So now the kohen is not allowed to marry the daughter. And now said chalal, can that chalal marry a mamzer? Absolutely not. So the Gemara says, so as a rule, it doesn't work. So the Gemara says, Lo kasha ke Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda. So the Gemara says, well, we could suggest that our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda. Remember, I say remember, it's also coming up on Ein Zayin. According to Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda, when a halal marries a bas yisrael, you know what the child is? A full-fledged Jew. No halal psul is going to go down to that child. The opinion of Rabbi Dustai ben Yehuda is that the Bas Yisrael is a mikvah. In this case, specifically in this case, the child is going to be totally tahor. So v'harei chalal shenasa chalal dekohen aser lisa bito v'aser nami lavo zebezeh. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's do it this way. Chalal chalal get married together. The child is a chalal unequivocally. The Kohen cannot marry either the mother nor the father. Now, Kohen can't marry mother or father. Can they marry a mamzer? Unequivocally, no. So again, as a rule, it doesn't work. And the Gemara says, you know what's coming next? Vesu hamutar aser. And by implication, if the Kohen is allowed to marry them, then they can't marry a mamzer, but that's also not true. So the Eger marries a Bas Yisrael. The Kohen's allowed to marry the daughter. And the Ger, is a Ger allowed to marry a mamzer? Absolutely yes. Okay, so, once again, that's not a way to explain our Mishnah. Ella, round three. Amar Nachman, Amar Rav Abu Avu, Acha Mamzer Me'achoso, Mamzer Me'ashasishika Beinayu, Tanakama Savra, Afila Mamzer Me'achoso, Nami Have Mamzer, and Rabbi Yehuda Savra, Me'ashasish, Have Mamzer Me'achoso, La Have Mamzer. So the Gemara says, well, what creates a Mamzer? Now, we all know the answer. It's Arayus. However, remember the Gemara in Yevamos? Mem Tes in Yevamos. Which kind of Arayus creates a Mamzer? So the halacha is, every arise creates a mamzer. That's the halacha, right? Notable exception to nida, but every arise creates a mamzer. That's the halacha. However, there is a shita in the Gemara in Yevamos, expressed by Rabbi Yoshua, which is not every arise creates a mamzer. Only arise that results in capital punishment, then and only then is the child going to be a mamzer. But a brother or sister having a child, according to Rabbi Yoshua, does not create a mamzer. That's not the accepted halacha, but that is the shita of Rabbi Yoshua. So now the Gemara points out, you know what is litigated over here in our Mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda? This issue of who's a mamzer, who's not a mamzer. And as Rashi explains over here, what does that mean? It means that if I have now, let's say, you know, we all know a mamzer can marry a mamzeris. That we know. But let's say one mamzer is a product of brother-sister. Another one is a product of, I'll just give an example of a capital crime, right? Father-in-law, daughter-in-law, kalasa. Okay. You already know, by the way, I don't struggle. I simply don't know. Why are some of the arayos capital punishment? Why are some not? I don't know. But it doesn't matter, okay? Even though I don't have a good explanation. Anyway, so now, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, so they're both mamzerim, so they can marry one another. And according to Rav Yehuda, only father-in-law, daughter-in-law product is a mamzer. The brother-sister product is not a mamzer. Therefore, they can't marry one another. So the Gemara says, you're telling me that's really the machlokus over here in our Mishnah Kedushin? So my kamash malantanina. Ezu mamzer koshu ubalo yavo divrabi akiva shemanatemane omer koshu chayav lav karis bidei shamayim. Vehalacha kidvarav. Right? The Mishnah in Yevamos, by the way, immediately tells us which is the accepted position. And Rabbi Yeshua Amar, Kol Shechayev Malav Mises Beizdin. Fine. So in other words, all this is articulated clearly in the Mishnah in Yevamos, which means the Mishnah in Yevamos already covered this. So, Ella Amarava. So here we are now, finally, round number four. Okay? And as I told you, we're going to go through all three trials of the Gemara in terms of explaining our Mishnah. So far, we have unsuccessfully explained our Mishnah. Here we are now with our fourth round, fourth and final round. Ella Marava Geramoni Moavi Kabenayu, Hachi Kamer Kolosum Lavo Bekal, Mainihu Geramoni Moavi, Mutarim Lavo Zebeze. I have a convert who comes from the nation of Ammon or Moav. So what do we know? We know that they can convert 100%. They are Jewish 100%. Who can they marry? Not a Jew. Okay. And if you're confused by that, we did this back in Yevamos, right? Admittedly, that was a long time ago in the Daf. And so a Ger Amon, Ger Moav cannot marry a Jew, even though after conversion they're fully Jewish. Okay, but they're Asur Lavo Bekal. So who can they marry? So first of all, they can marry another convert. And who can they marry? They can marry a Mamzer. And that's what the Tanakhama is teaching me. That when the Tanakhama says that Kol Asur Lavo Bekal, they were describing the Ger Amon and the Ger Moav. And they can't marry amongst the Jewish people, they are allowed to marry mamzerim. So, Rabbi Yehuda Oser. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. That is happens to be a grape shot in the Tanakhama. And then now explain, what's Rabbi Yehuda's role in this? Hachi kamar afa pisha Rabbi Yehuda Oser gam be mamzeres hani mili ger deroy lavo bekal. Aval ger amoni moavi de'in roy lavo bekal lo. Rabbi Yehuda will tell you that, look, a ger can marry a mamzeris. That's true. But that is a ger haroi lavo bekal. That's a ger that can marry into kal. But a ger that cannot marry into kal, so So according to Rav Yehuda, such a ger, meaning ger Amon, ger Moav, even though Rav Yehuda will tell you that a ger normally can't marry a mamzer, this ger can. Why? Because the ger of Amon and the ger of Moav, since they can't marry into Kal, they're allowed to marry mamzerim. Okay, an exclusion, an exception within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, we're going to pause over here. It's a perfect place to pause. Let's quickly recap. Okay, the first part of today's daf, we did issues of Ne'manus that took us to the Mishnah 9 Dalam and Aleph. And then, going forward, a Mishnah that gave us a rule. And for the remainder of today's daf, all we did is just try to wrap our head around the rule, and finally we did. When the Mishnah taught us the 9 Dalam and Aleph that call us Sirm Lavo Bekal, we're talking about the Ger Amon and the Ger Moav. Ger Amon and Ger Moav, so what can they do? Well, first of all, what can't they do? Can't marry in the Jewish people. In other words, they are psule kahal. What can they do? They can marry a mamzer. Okay. And what Rav Yehuda is telling us is that even though normally I will tell you that a ger can't marry a mamzer, I will make an exception, an exclusion for the ger Amon and ger Moav, because they're psule kahal themselves.